Gang, welcome back to Straight Up, the pop culture podcast hosted by us journalists Kathleen and Ellie. I'm Kathleen and you are?
Ellie. I went up an octave this time.
Nice.
Hello everyone.
Hi guys, how are you all? We hope you are having fabulous weeks, whatever you're doing, feeling in the festive spirit.
Do you feel festive?
Well, I feel a little bit more festive than I did because on the weekend I put up my Christmas tree on the Friday night and on the Saturday I had a Christmas lunch.
That is very nice. As you can see, because you're sitting in my sitting room, I put up my Christmas tree and then just didn't decorate it.
Yes. It's like 7 foot tall. It's a proper tree, that is, but literally not one bauble. Not one light.
Even tinsel or a light.
What's the plan? I feel like last year you did that. Yeah. And for a long while, it was just naked.
So what Issa and I do is we're like, let's have a Christmas day. So we try to have a cute Christmas day together.
Yeah, like make a thing of it.
And so it got to that day, which is Sunday, and it was raining and we were meant to have a whole day out in like London seeing the Christmas lights or whatever. We made it as far as Battersea Power Station, had a burger that took about 20 minutes from Manor, then got the bus home, put up the tree and then collapsed.
Yeah, I will say the idea of doing the Christmas tree is like a little bit more romantic than it actually is. Mar and I were laughing about that because we remembered last year we actually had a massive argument when we
Did
were picking
you?
Up the tree.
Why?
Including Marlon getting the cash out to pay for the tree, but he forgot to actually take the money out of the cash.
So he left it in there.
Luckily it got sucked back in, but obviously you don't find that out for like, I don't know, 3 days or whatever until the bank let you know. So suddenly he'd come back and I said, where's the cash? And he went, oh my God, I don't have it. And he was like, why didn't you say? I'm like, I'm sorry, how am I supposed to say? You know, just one of those funny, snippy rows, and getting a bloody 7 foot tree into the back of your car and all that is just not the one.
God,
so yeah,
no.
We took a leaf out of your book. I ordered it online. It was our first time ever doing that because I was a bit skeptical about not choosing, you know, choosing our own.
Yeah.
Actually went very well. So I got it from Soto Gardens and at first it was a little bit of a disaster. I mean, very first world problem, but the tree I ordered at first came and it just had like really absurd proportions. Like it had a massive long spindle in the minute. And
God, it's so cheeky when they do that.
Yeah, and was very bottom heavy. And so I complained and...
Girl after my own heart.
Yeah, complained and they very quickly and kindly sent me a new one. They came and replaced it, switched them. And the tree that I got, I'm sorry, but I'm so proud of. It is literally stunning. It's the most perfect, sweet little tree. Smaller than I've had previous years. Actually, it works a lot better in my flat. I've finally converted to the fact that a 7 foot tree in my flat is not that practical.
I thought your tree looked amazing last year, I have to say.
It was a bit like having like a forest, a piece
but
of a forest inside. I do love that wildness. Also, we were like, oh, the cat's probably just going to yank the whole thing down. That's what happened last year. Literally, we had to buy new baubles because every single one got smashed last year.
Oh my God, Ava, the cretin. Well, Nino always will only drink water out of the tree bowl now.
Why are cats so weird?
What is wrong with them? Literally, what is wrong with them?
Tell me about your Christmas lunch then. Mine was very cute. I want to know about your Secret Santa.
Oh, I want to know about yours. Okay, so my Secret Santa, I actually bought her two books that I thought she'd really love. Monica Heisty's really good, actually. I know that you weren't as keen on it, but I did see it on all the like best book roundups of the year. So I was like...
Oh, yeah. And it's a really fun read. Like, I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah. I'm just personally a little bit bored of the heartbreak tale.
Yes. So
that's just me.
That's just you. So I bought her that and also Cat Lady by Dawno Porter.
Oh,
I thought
love. I'm halfway through that at the moment.
Yes, I know. So I thought she'd really love that. I personally got a lovely bottle of Prosecco and a, what's it called? A stopper.
For your bottle?
Yes.
I know what you mean. Don't know what the official term is.
I think it must be a man that got it for me. Because I think men...
Oh, so do you not find out who it was?
No.
You never disclose who gave you the gift?
No.
Oh, that seems a really weird way to do Secret Santa.
I know, because you kind of want to know, don't you?
I've got two different ways of doing it. So my lunch that I had on Saturday, which is with my like core gals, there's six of us, and we have been doing it now for like years and years and years. And the idea is that we can each get like a really special present because you're just getting one. So we always get like jewellery. I got these little earrings from Rachel Jackson from Liberty.
I was noticing them as soon as you came in. They look so beautiful. I love that like really like dark gold colour.
Yeah. Yeah, like a tarnished gold. It's lovely, isn't it? And I got my friend Mel a little like Misma earring for her stack, like a little Diamante M, which is very cute, and a bit of makeup as well.
What makeup?
Some Rodial like priming drops.
Oh, lovely.
Really lovely.
Oh, I finally used your Beauty Pie account.
Oh, I saw.
Yes,
I obviously got emails about it.
Yes. So. I think that's so cute, having one really good quality Secret Santa present.
Yeah, it is really nice. But then with my other gals, my uni gals, because it's a bigger group of us, we this year are actually doing things a little bit different. I've got that lunch on Sunday and each person is bringing a present, but we don't know who it's for. So we haven't like divvied out names like you would usually. Everyone just brings a present that would work for anyone. You have to kind of conceal what it is. And then there'll be like a big sack and there'll be like 20 presents that like work for everyone. And then I think they'll be like handed out based on that. Maybe like a lucky dip or something.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
What was the best thing in there?
Well, I don't know, because it hasn't happened yet.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, yeah, my Secret Santa, I think there's like 37 of us.
That's a big old group.
Big old group. But yeah, I need, so it's got this really nice like whiskey discovery set last year. We still don't know who got it for him.
That's so weird, because you can't say thank you. I think that's odd. I think surely you want to disclose who you bought it for.
Well, I also think that you should go around in a circle and guess, and that's part of the fun.
What's the best or worst Secret Santa gift you've ever received?
Well, they might listen to this, so sorry guys, but I did once get a poo seat.
A what?
Sorry, do you know what I mean? A potty seat. Sorry, not a potty.
A potty?
You know those things that like that help you sit on a toilet better, and it's better for your digestive system.
A poop stoop.
A poop stoop.
I have heard of these. I've never actually seen one in the flesh.
It was mortifying. So it's my friends Akriti and Jason. I think it was Jason who was giving it to me, but he'd been advised by his girlfriend, now wife, Akriti, who is a medic, to get me one of these. Not because of
you specifically.
Me specifically, but just because it'd be funny, but it's also useful.
Yeah.
However,
very useful. They're meant to be great, I've heard.
Yes, although
apparently a lot of Americans have them.
Oh, really?
It's more of a thing over there, I think, than it is here.
I can't say I was not embarrassed opening that up in front of 30 people. And then also
that is a little bit embarrassing.
Because it was also during COVID. I think I was living in my family home and my parents were like, sorry, what?
Oh, I need to see it. I'm going to have a little look.
I think it's still with them.
I think I've told this story on air before, maybe last Christmas. But one year I got a very odd present when I was working in a pub.
Yeah. A very sexy, inappropriate present.
Well, it was just the combo. So I was working in a pub and we obviously did a staff Secret Santa, and a chef who was at least twice my age at the time had clearly got me, presents me with my present, and it's a Harrods teddy bear. I mean, sweet but weird. I was not 18.
A bit Lolita.
Yeah, and it was in my gap year, like right after school and before uni. So like young, do you know what I mean? I was literally just 18.
But you don't want a teddy bear at 18.
No. So a teddy bear and then an Anne Summers Kama Sutra book with real life.
It's like, I want you to be a child, but also to be sexy.
Like, am I a child or an adult? And like, I don't know. I just felt it was a very, very strange gift. He obviously meant well, but
it's actually very Britney Spears.
Very Britney Spears.
And everything we were talking about in our episode.
Very, very on brand for the episode. You're right.
Yeah. Men want us to be the virgin whore.
A Madonna or a whore. Well, there's plenty to get into today. I'm very excited. Guys, we should say, if you haven't listened to last week's episode, press pause immediately and go back and listen to it, because this is a two-parter. This is the second part of our Naughties It Girls investigation into Hollywood's hottest It Girls during the noughties, from Paris Hilton to Lindsay Lohan. And we are getting into the second half.
Feuds, fools, rivalries. Shit hits the fan. If it hadn't already. It has. It's more shit hits the fan. Where has that idiom come from?
I don't know.
Is it to do with like everything being so chaotic that shit is actually hurled into the air? Like,
could you imagine how
violent
it actually would be if you were standing anywhere near a fan that got poo thrown at it?
Somehow, like, I can imagine that happening in your house of pets.
Yeah.
Your house of mab. There's always some kind of horrible feces or sick related issue going on in Kathleen's zoo.
Well, I'll leave you with one, shall I, before we get into the episode.
Oh, God, what one I haven't heard?
The other day, Ava, who I mentioned off air. So, guys, you probably know by now, I have a cat that's quite highly strung. She was an indoor cat. We've now decided to start letting her out, and that has literally changed the game. She has become so much more well behaved, and she barely leaves our garden. She's only been over the fence like once, but just having that time outside I think is such a game changer. Our final straw was the other week when we popped her into the corridor, because she kept climbing up on the kitchen surfaces and we were cooking dinner, and she'll nick like any food that she can. She's like nicked tuna sandwiches like off my plate before and then like runs away skidding.
It's hilarious.
I had to go and hide under the bed.
I kind
of
respect it.
I know, the sass is actually unreal. We're like, why didn't we call her Saskia? It would have been such a good name.
Yeah,
but she did a dirty protest where we literally locked her in the hall for like 10 minutes. I say locked as well, like as in we just put her in there and shut the door, and we're like, right, we'll let her back in when we finish cooking, because this is literally crazy. She's all over our bloody chopping boards. And Marlon had done some washing and a pair of his tracksuit bottoms were drying on the radiator next to the door. She pulled the tracksuit bottoms down off the radiator, weed on them and pooed on them. At like a really weird time that she doesn't usually poo either. So it's clearly like literally a dirty protest.
I was actually joking when I said, like, I can't believe you have another app. It's every week, Cuthers.
I know.
Every week you have something more to tell me.
I know. Well, this is why I'm hoping now her going outside will well and truly put the kibosh on the pooing and weeing indoors.
I don't think I've said on air my rat problem.
What?
When Nina brought in a rat.
I thought you meant in the house. No,
no, no,
I was
no,
like,
no, no.
Excuse me?
No, no, no. So Is was doing some yoga or something. I think he was stretching on our carpet, and he was like going backwards and forwards, and one movement back brought him like eye to eye with like the very like just under the drinks trolley, which used to be in the corner. And that's when he saw this massive rat under the drinks trolley.
Alive or dead?
Dead. That Nina had brought in. And he genuinely was so distressed. Because also, usually when it's just a mouse, you like double bag it and you don't really feel it. But yeah. With the rat, it was so hefty, he had to use a dustpan and brush, which we then threw away.
Yeah, that actually hurts my stomach. Also,
how does a cat bring in a rat?
Well, he's a big lad, is your Nino.
He's a bigger, actually.
Strapping boy.
My other cat did bring in a squirrel, a dead squirrel, up three flights of stairs. And then after that, maybe because of the rat, he was sick on my Turkish carpet and I didn't see and I stepped in it barefoot.
Barefoot.
Because it's always, whenever I wake up in the morning, I'm always like, oh my God, what am I going to find this morning? And you have to be careful and put the light on and look where you're going. Because there's often a bird, a mouse, a bit of sick. From what he's done in the night.
Sure, we're making it sound really lovely having pets, guys. It's all completely worth it. And if you would like to hear more about cat-related endeavours, then do read Dawn O'Porter's Cat Lady.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be chatting to her all about it in next week's episode.
Yes, we will. Right, so on to the nuts and bolts of this week's episode. As promised, guys, we are back, continuing where we left off on the dark and twisted sagas of the It Girls of the Noughties, specifically in this two-parter, Lindsay Lohan, Paris Hilton, Nicole Richie and Britney Spears. So I think in our last episode, we kind of hovered around 2003, 2004, which I would say were the pinnacle of Lindsay Lohan and Paris Hilton's success as It Girls of the Noughties. Lindsay Lohan had released Mean Girl. She was being paid $7.5 million a film. She was adored by the nation. But then, of course, as with every successful woman in the public eye, once you get too much love, you have to come down.
Yeah.
And that fall was steep. So, Cathers, I reckon that we should start with Nicole, with the feud between Nicole and Paris.
Yeah, we talked a lot in the last episode about what a runaway success The Simple Life was, the reality TV show that both girls starred in 2003, which is when it's premiered. There was actually a massive drama between the two, so much so that Fox cancelled the show in 2005 due to the rift between the two women. It was eventually picked up by E!, which aired its fourth and fifth seasons, but fourth, the women weren't even filmed together. They had to do things completely separately. And essentially, the narrative was that they were competing to be the best housewife. First, though, I would like to go back and give a bit of context on Nicole Richie's biography.
Yes.
So I think it's fascinating. I'm sure most people know that she is the adopted daughter of Lionel Richie. But Nicole was born Nicole Camille Escovado on 21st of September 1981 in California to the musician Peter Escovado and the assistant Karen Moss, who worked for Peter's sister Sheila E., who was a very well-known artist. She was also a drummer for Prince. And there was a fun fact, and not to get too much off tangent, but she was engaged to Prince at one time.
Wow.
And while Sheila was with Prince, Lionel saw Nicole for the first time on stage age two with a tambourine. So Lionel had gone to a Prince show and there was Nicole on the stage. He was taken with this little girl at the time, but then thought nothing of it. A while later, it turned out that Lionel Richie knew that he knew Nicole's birth parents, Peter and Karen. He, as the story goes, had heard that the couple were having serious problems, and Richie intuitively felt that it wasn't great for such a young child to be on tour like that, following her parents around, and he felt that there was a lot of instability. So what happened is he offered for her to stay with him and his then wife, Brenda Harvey, where they became Nicole's legal guardians. Now, what follows is a little odd because, of course, the way that Lionel tells the story is that he was essentially a savior to Nicole. So he told People magazine, Nicole was actually a godsend. She was a little girl who needed a shot. She was used to people coming and going. She'd look at me and I say, I'm not going anywhere. So People magazine write that Nicole's biological parents were friends of Richie's who were struggling financially. However, Sheila E., the biological aunt, has written in her autobiography, The Beat of My Own Drum, about what went down. And I think it framed the power dynamic in a little bit of a different light. So she hints that the Richies very much convinced Peter and Karen to give up their child. Actually, Brenda Harvey, Lionel's wife at the time, they couldn't have children, so they were desperate for a child. And actually, Sheila, I quote, she says in the book that the heartbreaking part is that once Nicole Escovado legally became Nicole Richie, it felt like we lost her. We all lost her. I think the Richies had set up a beautiful bedroom for Nicole at their home. They had enrolled her into a local school. Like, it was very obvious that they wanted to be her parents. Sheila E. writes in her autobiography, as a single working mom, Karen was extremely grateful, but very torn. If Nikki stayed where she was, living rent-free, then Karen could earn enough for their future without disrupting the child's life. However, she then goes on to say that Lionel would do anything to keep Brenda happy. She does deal with it in a very sensitive way in that she says, this isn't my story to tell. I won't say any more. This is Nicole's story. But to me, that does speak to the fact that perhaps Nicole's parents were in some way pushed into this decision by a very famous, very wealthy couple that had a lot more power than they did.
And what's their relationship like now?
I don't think they have any relationship with her at all. I'm fairly certain that, again, I think Sheila E. touches on this in her book, in that the original agreement was that the Escovados would stay part of her life, but they actually didn't.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is a really weird story when you look back on it, isn't it? Also, as I touched on in the last episode, Nicole very much had a wild child persona. Mm. So it's little wonder that Paris and Nicole worked so well as this duo on telly, because Nicole really did have a very fast-paced kind of Hollywood childhood, I suppose.
Yes.
So Lionel and Brenda actually divorced when Nicole was 9, right after she'd been officially adopted. Lionel had been having an affair, and Nicole has spoken at length in interviews about just how traumatic that was at the time. So not only was she caught between her parents during their divorce, but she's also said in a 2006 interview with Vanity Fair that her parents overindulged her because of the divorce. So she said, their way of making me happy was to say yes to everything I wanted. But I don't think a little girl should have that much freedom.
That's so interesting. And again, that's another like uniting thread between all of these women, isn't it? That they were wild, perhaps because they were so disturbed as children.
Yeah, it really speaks to just how much the kind of partying lifestyle really does stem from trauma.
Mm.
I said this to you off air, but that's something that has come up for me so much doing this research. I'm working on something to do with recovery and addiction at the moment, and so I've been really thinking about the reasons why people suffer from addiction, or why people want to party, or why people want to like block out real life with drugs and alcohol. And actually, I think these women's partying, so yeah, to speak, is indicative of the incredible trauma that they were trying to run away from.
Yes, I reckon so. You're essentially self-medicating.
Exactly that. So on her drug use, Nicole Richie said in an interview with ABC that she started on pot at 13, which in her circle was very normal. And then, and I quote, drinking every once in a while, but that wasn't really my thing. And then I started getting into cocaine at like 14 or 15. Gosh. And then I stopped. And then I went to heroin at about 19, I believe. So Nicole suffered with heroin addiction for quite a few years. Actually, right before The Simple Life happened, she had been caught with heroin in her car and arrested. The Simple Life, in the end, presented an incredible opportunity for her to get clean. She realized that she couldn't be on telly with these drug problems in the state that she was in. And so actually, knowing that The Simple Life was going to happen, together with being caught with heroin by the police, meant that she, in 2003, decided to go into rehab. This was actually a huge moment for the family in terms of their trauma as well, because she says that the therapy within rehab and post-rehab was the first time her parents had not only been in the same room, but actually spoken in 10 years.
Oh my God.
So you can so see the thread there, as we say, in terms of the relationship between her adoptive parents with each other,
yes,
being a massive trigger.
And there is, I think, a trope, I think, when a troubled child might want to act out to get attention, to bring their parents together as a way of uniting them.
Exactly.
Even though it might be through really awful things. It's just a cry for help, isn't it?
All right, guys, by now you've definitely heard us raving about London Nootropics adaptogenic coffees. They actively change how you feel depending on the blend you choose, from the way that Flow Clears Brain Fog and has made me more productive than I've been in years, to Mojo's energizing boost.
And we are so chuffed to say that we've got an exclusive 20% discount code to share with you all as well.
Very exciting, but quickly, if you don't know, the power of London Nootropics lies in the adaptogenic ingredients like medicinal mushrooms and plant root extracts, which have become all the rage in biohacking and wellness recently because they actively boost brain health while noticeably helping with focus, reducing anxiety, boosting energy, memory, and much more.
At the moment, I just cannot get enough of Zen's soothing feels. It's a blend I always go for when I need to be alert, but still chill and balanced. Like when we're doing a weekend recording in the morning and I've been out the night before, essential.
Classic.
Yes, very classic. It's made with premium CBD and award-winning ashwagandha in the highest concentration. It's specifically designed to promote a sense of peace, combating the effects of stress, tension, irritability, something we both definitely need in busy times like Christmas, don't we, Cathers? When we're burning the candle at both ends.
Yes, we do. And honestly, I've converted so many of my my friends already as well, especially the anxious Annies. And I just get such a kick out of hearing all of your feedback on all the different blends. We are obsessed and can't wait for you to try them.
If you'd like to try it for yourself, then head to londonnootropics.com. Use our 20% discount code straight up by entering it at the checkout. That's straight up, all one word, no caps. Thank you so much to London Nootropics. So how does Nicole and Paris's feud play out in the press?
So as I mentioned in the previous episode, they weren't necessarily the lifelong thickest of childhood best friends that they were made out to be by The Simple Life. It had in fact been quite a strategic decision on behalf of Fox, the channel and Paris to get a kind of sidekick for Paris in this show. So while Paris was objectively, I suppose, the star of the show, audiences did indeed love Nicole as well. They had been very, very savvy about almost, I guess, starting their own lexicon. So again, we touched on this in the last episode, but their catchphrases and slogans, whether that was "that's hot" or "salasa, salasa," yeah, like they were just infectious and people picked up on them and loved this kind of friendship between the two girls, this secret language.
I think is something that girls always do. In fact, having just come home from a holiday with one of my best girlfriends, you really mimic each other's little ways of speaking.
Yeah,
and we do it as
realizing.
Well.
Yeah.
We always pick up how each other speaks.
You can always
speaks.
Tell yeah. when you've been with the other person yeah. because you pick up on all their like colloquialisms. Yeah. So the women were regularly pitted against each other in the press from the get-go while they were best friends on the show, you know, allegedly. In fact, the media did very much kind of put the two women in competition. One such competition moment arose after the second season in 2004. And in fact, I think it was Howard Stern on his radio show who first brought it up. And then the story became a bigger thing when Nicole was pushed on it in another interview in terms of who was being paid what for the show. So some people think, and of course there is no absolute proof on this, that the rift between them began when Nicole realized that Paris was being paid significantly more than her. So Nicole said that she was being paid upward of $75,000 an episode, and there are reports that Paris was getting $5 million or something for the series.
Oh my God.
So it was quite disparate. It actually made me think of the feud between the Call Her Daddy girls.
Yeah.
In terms of two women becoming incredibly successful together and then how you measure each person's input. I mean, I think Nicole Richie's quite right. While I don't think it would be fair for them to be paid the same for the first season because it was essentially Paris's show.
Yeah.
By the third season, I think you could pay those women equally, you know?
Yeah. And with the Call Her Daddy scandal, Sophia was only doing like creative brain work, whereas Alex was doing the editing.
Exactly.
Social media and like planning.
So it shows that, of course, these things are always up for debate in terms of who puts in what. But it very quickly went sour to the point that the third season, as I mentioned earlier, was cancelled by Fox due to the rift between the women. And when it was picked up by E, they couldn't even get the two women filming together and had to do all of their filming separately. Mm. One of the other alleged potential reasons of why the women feuded was this very strange story that was reported in the press in relation to the sex tape. So Paris would use the tabloids as a mouthpiece, as we've touched on, to almost communicate with former friends during feuds. When she was asked about why her and Nicole had fallen out, she said, "Nicole knows what she did." And essentially being like, "I'll never forgive her for it." So hinting that Nicole had done something massive, but was like, "I'm not going to ever speak about what that was. Nicole knows."
Right.
Of course, speculation then was rife. And some believed that Nicole Richie had hosted a screening party of Paris Hilton's SNL performance, but because of this jealousy about pay that was running underneath everything, had in fact then screened the sex tape instead, having invited all these people around. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily true. That's a seriously like bonkers thing to do to a friend.
That sounds wild.
Nicole has, of course, claimed that that never happened. So she's also said in interviews, like, "There's no big secret. Me and Paris didn't fall out for any particular reason. There was no blowout. We just weren't that similar. And I realized I didn't have much in common with her. And especially post rehab, like, I just essentially like realized that I needed to cut certain people out of my life."
So fair.
Yeah. So fair. I mean, it doesn't paint Paris in the best light. Not going to lie that Nicole was in this new phase of her life. And the press really went to town on that as well. Like, they, at the time, Paris then got engaged to a Greek shipping magnate who was also called Paris. And that was framed as her kind of growing up and leaving the party behind. And of course, Nicole Richie was being framed in that way as well. You know, leaving drugs behind, leaving the partying lifestyle behind. There were a few unfortunate DUI events.
Can we have a side moment to talk about the number of women getting DUIs.
It's crazy, isn't it? And it reminded me that Khloe Kardashian has one as well. I think it's that Hollywood brat circle, to be honest, where they think that they're above the law and above everyone else.
It's that, because you'd think that they have the money to get a driver or a cab after these clubs.
Yeah, but they just choose to get into their own cars and then get pulled over by the police instantly.
Madness. I saw someone say, oh no, it's that they like parking is a nightmare in LA, and therefore they might pull up to a bar thinking they're just going to have a drink or two and not realising how wasted they'll get. I'm like, no, if you look at Lindsay or Paris and they're getting out of the car, they're like in clubbing attire.
And like Paris's insistence on continuing to do it. So she was, to go back to Paris Hilton, she was first arrested in 2006 when she was found driving under the influence, and she had a suspended license off the back of it. She was then pulled over multiple times for continuing to drive with an invalid license. They had literally been suspended for drink driving and then was kept being caught drink driving. And then in 2010, she went to prison for that, bear in mind as well. Then in 2010, she was arrested when she was found in a car in Vegas with then boyfriend Cy Waite. Marijuana smoke was wafting from the car, so officers investigated, and she was charged with possession of marijuana and cocaine. She then had to plead guilty to drug possession and obstructing an officer.
And how did this like criminality, this light criminality, affect her career and the way the press talked about her? Like, would you say that contributed to her fall?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think she was wildly popular even post sex tape. So as I just touched on, Paris did jail time in 2007 for a probation violation. Her original sentence was actually 45 days, but she was released after 23 days for good behavior. This is when kind of Paris fever, I think, reached a real, real peak. At the time, a study found that Americans were more interested in news relating to Paris than they were in the 2008 presidential campaign, the G8 summit, or the talks between Bush and Putin at the time. Us Weekly then stopped reporting on her. So they published their first 100% Paris free issue, which was quite interesting. The editor went on to talk about the kind of national witch hunt against Paris and said that Paris symbolizes everything that is wrong with celebrity behavior. So I think at this point, people were just super pissed off. They were like, she's an entitled princess. You either love to hate or you just hate it. I think we spoke at length previously about how she'd become a kind of totemic figure for the feminist movement of like everything that was like holding feminism backwards.
Yes. And I think, as you just said a few seconds ago, we were the problem, the people consuming this content. Like, people were febrile with their obsession with these women. And Perez Hilton, when he talks about like looking back over his career and whether he felt guilty, he's like, yeah, of course I did, but it was never ever meant to be so vitriolic. It became more and more vitriolic because that's what people wanted, and like I fueled what people wanted. And it's a whole chicken and egg situation. It's like, is it the fault of TMZ, Perez Hilton and all the other tabloids, or is it the consumers of the tabloids?
I mean, that's such a difficult conversation that just keeps coming up and coming up over the years, doesn't it? Like, that was a big topic during COVID, because places like the Daily Mail would just publish endless fear-mongering articles, but of course they publish based on what's being clicked on.
Exactly.
So they commission stories based on what people want to read. And so it's like, where does the responsibility lie? Is it with the media organizations to actively choose news that isn't going to be read as much? Or is it on the consumer to not read those things?
I think it's naive and utopian to think that businesses are not going to put what is in the interest of their business first.
So I just don't read the Daily Mail now, even though obviously I desperately want to a lot of the time. I only ever go on it in extreme like research circumstances.
For the podcast.
Yeah, because I just refuse to give them clicks because I so wholeheartedly disagree with everything they do that if I read their site, then I'm part of the problem, you know? Oh, and also, and this touches on something you mentioned with Us Weekly last episode, when Paris was offering her first post-jail interview at a price that really got up the backs of Us Weekly.
Ah.
So the Hilton family were offering £1 million price tag for her first interview, and she ended up doing it with CNN. But the other publications did not like that. And so in turn, a lot of those tabloids started to hate on her even more.
Yes, it's so true that a lot of these women were very much in a kind of agreement and relationship with the paparazzi, in terms of they would often be getting their paychecks from the paps. At one point, when Lindsay was financially in the red, she actually offered one of the paps to get a picture of her in her SUV going to jail for $10,000. And she organized that herself.
Wow. I mean, even now, paid for paparazzi shots are a huge thing. They're part of the Kardashian arsenal. Whenever you see photos, pap shots that the Kardashians or the Jenners themselves post next to like actual paparazzi shots, you're like, this is very clearly being paid for by you.
Yes. So tightly mirroring Paris's cycle of petty crime and DUIs, Lindsay Lohan also, after 2004, when she was, I guess, at the height of her success, had the most money, was at her most famous, also started drink driving, constantly getting arrested for drink driving and for possession of cocaine.
Isn't it interesting, I think, how so many celebrities seem to be caught with drugs then, whereas that just doesn't really happen now. And I don't think that's about celebrities being cleaner, while of course they are to an extent. I think that for whatever reason, they don't seem to be the target of the police in the same way.
Exactly. So Lindsay Lohan's fall was very much as a result of her alcohol and drug abuse. And it coincided, not surprisingly, with her work output becoming really bad. So after the success of Mean Girls, her films just totally bombed. She had Georgia Rule.
Oh, I remember that classic.
Yes. And while she was filming Georgia Rule in 2006, a letter from the studio boss went viral for exposing her outrageous behavior on set, for partying too much, not turning up to set, causing production costs, damages of like $500,000 every day where the crew were just waiting for her. And the studio clearly felt like if their film was going to get made, they would have to resort to extreme measures and literally not only write this really strongly worded and quite patronizing letter to Lindsay, but then to leak it themselves. And it called her a spoiled child. Like, it really went ham. And it did get her to finish the film and turn up on time and actually come to work. But the film completely bombed. And then her films after that also bombed. But it's worth saying that Lindsay was like fucking exhausted. While she was recording her Be Fully Loaded, she was also recording a debut album, Speak. Do you remember her song Rumours?
I do. A classic.
Yes.
Again.
And it's really interesting, isn't it, that at the same time, if you switch things, Britney Spears, pop star, was starring in Crossroads. Like, it was a time where I think people who were in charge of these young women wanted them to do everything to get as much money as possible. They were literally being plumbed for any possible talent they had.
Oh, totally. I mean, Paris and Nicole were exactly the same. So Paris had her debut album out, I think, by 2006.
Yes.
The Stars Are Blind, whatever.
Yes.
And she'd also starred in several different films. She did a cameo in like Zoolander as herself, but she was in The OC, in Veronica Mars. She'd been in a horror movie. She was doing lots of modeling. It was very much like, you'll be a multi-hyphenate.
Yes. Or like even over here, Billie Piper. She has talked at length the fact that like she really didn't want to be a pop star.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they were just like, there's more money to be made if you can do it all. We want to all dancing, singing, everything star. Anyway, so I think Lindsay is under an enormous amount of pressure, plus her parents have divorced. And I think it's really, really difficult with her family.
Also, she'd had like no childhood. She'd been working like a Trojan since like literally being a baby. That's all going to come to a head at some point, let's face it.
Exactly. And she was living in the Chateau Marmont. So I don't think living in a hotel when you're in your late teens, early 20s is conducive to any healthy relationship with alcohol.
Paris Hilton was living in the Waldorf Astoria in New York. That's where they were living.
And Lindsay was getting increasingly paranoid because hotel staff were clearly selling stories about her. And she had these really intimate relationships with the hotel staff instead of proper friends. A bit like Anna Delvey and her living in hotels and like becoming best friends with the concierge. Anyway, so she develops really, really damaging relationships with alcohol and drugs. So this all culminates in 2007. In January 2007, after finishing Georgia Rule and the whole shit show with the production, she checks into rehab for the first time. In February 2007, she comes out of rehab. In May 2007, Lindsay Lohan has the most reputationally damaging moment of all. News of the World get hold of a video of her doing cocaine, and they publish stills from the video. News of the World at that point being masterminded by Piers Morgan.
So it was Piers that did this.
Yes. And the newspaper reports that the Georgia Rule star took part in a marathon cocaine binge in a bathroom at a Hollywood club 20 days after her stint in rehab. A friend of Lohan told News of the World that they released the video because they fear that things will end tragically for the star. And this is just so toxic. If this friend really is a friend rather than some kind of weird source of Piers's. The friend says, and she's credited as female, "That's why I'm showing this video, so the world can know what Lindsay has been doing, and she can't lie about it to herself or anyone else." So it's this weird faux moralism.
This, like, fake, I'm helping her.
Exactly.
I cannot deal with that, like, blatant angle.
Exactly. So the friend says that Lindsay has been doing 20 lines of cocaine in one night. Then she says, "Lindsay does not care who sees her do coke and where she does it. She carries around a water bottle to try to fool everyone into thinking she is clean, but she tips the water out and refills it with vodka and soda. I remember looking at her and thinking how pathetic she looked and how out of control she had become. When she is on coke, which is most of the time, all the attention has to be on her. I've lost count of the number of times I've watched as she stripped naked in front of everyone. Then she loves to check herself out in the mirror. She parades around with her boobs hanging out."
What?
Sounds like one jealous girl to me.
That cannot be a friend.
She's clearly so jealous that Lindsay has all the attention. Then the Insider also tells the paper that Lohan has boasted about sleeping with men in Hollywood, including James Blunt, Callum Best, Joaquin Phoenix, Benicio del Toro, Jared Leto, and James Franco. And remember that information, because later on in the episode, we'll need to talk about Lindsay's sex list. So this really rocks the boat for Lindsay reputationally. She becomes kind of, particularly after the Georgia Rule fiasco, she becomes kind of untouchable in Hollywood. Directors don't want to work with her. And the press really ramp up their mocking of her to the point where in July, when she is again, like, really incapacitated with alcohol and drug issues, she can't attend a Jay Leno interview. She has to pull out. So instead of just cancelling the interview, Rob Schneider, American actor and comedian, comes in and spoofs Lindsay by wearing a wig, high heels, and an alcohol monitoring bracelet, and does a whole interview as Lindsay. And it's just disgusting. And yeah, it's like a whole 20 minutes of him doing this mock interview, making fun of her alcohol abuse. It's just insane, although I must say.
How old was Lindsay at this time?
She was 21.
She's just so young to be humiliated in a public forum like that.
Although I did laugh at one line. Is it really bad to tell you what it was?
Go on then.
He goes, he's obviously imitating her. He goes, "I was so wasted that I was in my car, but couldn't find my car."
That is quite good. You would just think, if you were on Lindsay's team, or indeed Paris's or anyone else's at this point, you'd be like, "You are not driving. We are having a driver just take you everywhere that you ever need to go, and most of your problems will be solved."
So the reason she couldn't attend the Jay Leno interview was because that month she was taken into custody on suspicion of driving under the influence, driving on a suspended license, and possession of cocaine after she gets into a verbal argument with a woman whom she then chased in her SUV. That woman was apparently her assistant. And she chased her in a car, and there's audio footage of the person driving the car, who I think was the assistant's mother, like, calling 911 and being like, "I am being chased."
Wow.
It's wild. And then after that, it's just a constant cycle of arrest, violating probation, rehab.
Poor Lindsay. She's clearly really struggling with addiction.
Yeah. Whilst putting out terrible films and getting absolutely humiliated in the press with her reviews. And this is the issue, which I'm sure you're constantly looking into with your work with recovery, is that as an addict, it's really hard to remain creative. And I think there's a direct correlation between Lindsay Lohan losing her spark and losing her ability as an actress while she is in a cycle of addiction.
Well, yeah, because you're spending, like, your whole life in this awful cycle of inebriation and then being hungover, essentially, and suffering the consequences. I mean, how can you really get on with exciting creative projects when you cannot get through a day without having to abuse substances?
Cathers, we have many pet peeves that unite us, but I must say one of the most notable has got to be our misophonia, which, as we've recently discovered, is the term used to describe a negative emotional reaction to common sounds.
Oh my God, babe, nothing enrages us quite like the sound of someone frothing at their desk or tapping away violently on their keyboard. for me, as someone that struggles with ADHD, distracting sounds are honestly such an issue when I'm trying to work. I actually can't cope.
Of course, which is why we're such big fans of the tiny, comfy and super unobtrusive Karma earbuds from our brilliant podcast sponsor, Flare Audio. Cathers, how do they work? Take it away.
Well, huns, our ears are shaped like shells, so the sound we receive is always distorted at about 20%. Most people's brains filter that out, but if, like me and Elle's, yours needs a little bit of a helping hand, then the Karma earbuds are just perfect.
Such an upgrade, I have to say, from my noise-cancelling headphones, which are very antisocial when you're in the office and a colleague's trying to talk to you and block you off from sounds you actually really need to hear. Don't just take our word for it either, guys. They've sold 2 million pairs since the launch of lockdown, and they even do mini versions for kids and a new version called Karma Soft, which is an extra soft option for those with more sensitive ears.
And the extra, extra good news is that Flare Audio has 20% off site-wide right now. It's for Black Friday, so go to flareaudio.com to snap up your Karma earbuds for just $15.96 instead of the usual $19.95.
Thank you so much to Flare.
It was a real shame. I feel like, you know, if she'd had better people around her at the time, what would have been better is if she'd actually just taken a step back from the public eye for a good like 5 years and got properly back on track and then maybe started doing films again. But whoever her agent was at that time was clearly pretty irresponsible and just wanted to make money, because why would you keep booking her on jobs when she's in and out of rehab like this?
Well, I think it's her mum's fault again, because she's being managed by her mum.
So her mum was still the manager at this point.
So in 2010, Lindsay Lohan was advised to fire her mum as her manager. So yeah, all this time, Dina is still her manager.
Has she ever gone back and sued her or anything?
No, they're still close. Like, I looked at Dina's...
Oh, they're close. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So I looked at her Instagram today, and Dina's Instagram has Lindsay all over it. And yeah, they clearly still all hang out, and with her sister as well.
I mean, it's such a trope, isn't it? To the extent that the troubled mother-daughter relationship is very much the basis of the celebrity's trauma in The Idol, the show on HBO,
yes,
made by The Weeknd, that we've talked
very
about a lot,
point,
which follows like a young female celebrity.
I also think there's a sense of... Her dad was just so terrible that in comparison, her mum...
She needed to have one of them in her life perhaps as well.
Her mum was stable compared to her dad.
And I mean, you really wouldn't trust anyone. If you've been famous since you were 10 years old, I think it's incredibly obvious to even make this point, but celebrities always go on and on about how you don't know who you can trust, and keeping those around you that knew you pre-fame, and having like your oldest friends continue to like make up your circle. Whereas if you became famous at 10, who was your circle pre-fame? I mean, your parents.
Well, exactly. And then basically the last years of the decade and 2010, 2012 was just terrible films. She was cast in a TV movie, going from, bear in mind, she was used to be paid $7.5 million per film. She then dropped down to $300,000 to play Elizabeth Taylor in a TV film. She got fired from the film The Canyons, Paul Schrader's film. And she got fired from the film Inferno as well.
So, for bad behavior on set.
Yeah. And it was, yeah. So just like...
I mean, no wonder she can get much work in Hollywood then, to be fair.
Exactly. So anyway, clearly Lindsay and Paris were spiraling and they couldn't catch a break. Every single misnomer and every single cycle of addiction and abuse was being raked over by the tabloids and the paparazzi. Every dark corner of their lives was being exposed for public consumption and pure fascination. But then, of course, the women were also pitted against each other, and their feud became a huge talking point in the tabloids around this time. So in 2006, an infamous video called the Firecrotch video essentially launched TMZ, which basically I think was the apex of Lindsay and Paris's feud. There had already been rumors that they hated each other because Lindsay had got with Paris's ex, Stavros.
Yes, there'd been an alleged incident in a nightclub where Lindsay was on the phone to him and the two women were seen arguing for the first time in public when they were meant to kind of be on a night out together.
Exactly. And then shortly after that, this video published by TMZ saw Paris's friend Brandon Davis completely shit talking Lindsay in the most vile way. Like, it pains me to even quote some of it, but I think we have to for context.
Yeah.
But Brandon Davis is walking with Nikki and Paris outside a club, and Paris is whispering in his ear, clearly telling him to say something about Lindsay. I think you can even kind of see that she's saying, say the firecrotch thing. Yeah, so then Brandon, after Paris whispers something in his ear, yells, Lindsay Lohan has got a fire crotch. Lindsay Lohan has got the sweatiest, stinkiest orange vagina anyone has ever seen. It smells like diarrhea. It's got freckles.
It smells like diarrhea. I mean, that is just so childish and pathetic.
It's disgusting, but also,
absolutely,
yeah,
disgusting, obviously. But completely just childish. Tragic and lame for a fully grown adult to be saying those things.
And I mean, he goes on. He actually says lots of other things. And the whole time, Paris is like sniggering whilst on the phone. But it's so clearly orchestrated by Paris.
Yes. Didn't she deny it when people asked?
She completely denied it, yeah. And in fact, she denies a lot of things. So then throughout this decade, there is this constant back and forth between Lindsay saying something that Paris did to the paparazzi, and then the paparazzi confronting Paris about it and Paris denying it. And then there's one bit in particular where Lindsay comes up to the paps, clearly really drunk one night after a club, and says, look at this bruise. Paris hit me with the drink and poured a drink all over me. Like, I can't believe she would do that. She's so mean. So then at another point, the paps confront Paris about the bruise and Lindsay is there. And Paris goes, Lindsay, tell them the truth. And it's a bit like a hostage video. Lindsay goes, I never said that. Paris is my friend. I love her so much. She's a good person.
There's a really weird dynamic between the two, isn't it? Where they went from being friends to being like mortal enemies constantly.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'd be packed out together having a great time, and other times they'd be mortal enemies.
But I think it's like, are they having fun with it? Like, a lot of the time they seem like they're kind of doing a entertainment. So then we get to, finally, Bimbo Summit in 2006.
A full circle moment, as that's where we started.
A full circle moment. Exactly. So guys, as we hinted at in the first episode, Britney and Paris were seen emerging from a nightclub and getting into Paris's car. Then, very strangely, in the video, we see Paris's publicist essentially like walking Lindsay, like grabbing her shoulders and walking Lindsay towards Paris's car also, and kind of forcing her into the car. So then the paps took this picture of Lindsay, Paris and Britney in the car together. Lindsay and Paris look highly amused. Britney looks incredibly confused. I didn't mean that for that to rhyme, by the way. And since then, they have both had completely conflicting accounts of the picture. Paris has said, I didn't want to humiliate Lindsay in front of everyone. She insisted on getting in my car, but I didn't feel like I could tell her to get out in front of the paps. But then we clearly see in the video footage, Paris's PR making Lindsay get in the car.
And probably thinking that it would be a photo opportunity.
Maybe. And Lindsay on a podcast has actually risen above it and been like, I don't want to talk about Paris anymore. But I think Paris remembers things wrong.
Oh, I mean, I think that Lindsay has been a little bit more chic about this whole thing. Doing my research, while I do feel incredibly sorry for Paris in terms of what she's been through, particularly, of course, at Provo Canyon and the abuse that she endured in this troubled teen facility, she's definitely not a perfect person. I mean, she's treated people badly. So not only did she have this feud with Lindsay, which doesn't paint her in the best light, she also, as I touched on, had a huge falling out with Nicole Richie. I don't think that Paris comes out of that looking particularly great either. What I will say is that the media pitting the two women against each other did reach like a real fever pitch. There was a 2006 profile of Nicole in Vanity Fair, and the headline was Nicole Weighs In. So for one, I just want to take a pause and be like, what the hell? Why were all publications so obsessed with talking about women's body, and why did they think that it was appropriate to do that? In this piece, Nicole literally goes on to talk about her drastic weight loss at the time and hints at having an eating disorder, and they make the headline Nicole Weighs In.
Like, it is what was actually wrong with people? Insane.
What was wrong with people? And then the Stand first. Emerging from Paris Hilton's shadow, Nicole Richie is busy one-upping her former best friend and Simple Life co-star, from the bestseller list to the style pages to a debut album in the works. At 24, the adopted daughter of pop star Lionel Richie has sworn off the heroin she used after her parents' divorce, but her weight is now the issue. Persuading her medical team to talk to Leslie Bennett's, Richie also discusses her family's struggle to heal, her takes on the Hilton feud and the dangers ahead. I just don't even know where to start with how many things are wrong with that single Stand first.
Mind-boggling.
As Leslie Bennett puts it in this Vanity Fair piece, the feud did launch a silent game of one-upmanship played out across the entire spectrum of pop culture. Paris got a micro dog as a style accessory. Nicole got two. Nicole got engaged to Adam Goldstein, better known as DJ AM. Paris got engaged to Greek shipping heir Paris Latsis. Paris got disengaged. Nicole got disengaged. Paris published a book. Nicole published a book. Paris published her second book. Nicole went to work on her second book. Like, it actually is quite mad. But what I think is super relevant there is the mention of Nicole Richie's book, The Truth About Diamonds. So I read the book at the time.
Did you? God, you were so good at reading all these celebrity books.
Yeah, I was super into all of this. Like this, this was my jam. I'm exactly that millennial woman that was literally devouring Nicole Richie and Paris Hilton's books. So I read, I remember I got it for Christmas one year. Again, my parents, I remember my mum being like, why are you reading this trash? So upset.
But look, a clever girl who likes the lowbrow.
Well, hey, I'm doing something useful out of it in the end.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually should totally tell my mum that.
We're totally intellectualising it.
So the book was called A Truth About Diamonds, a novel, as I say. It was published in 2005. It was a very, very thinly veiled piece of autofiction. A woman in her early 20s who had been adopted at the age of 7 by a music superstar and his wife, and who now runs in circles with all Hollywood celebrities. What followed was a wild childhood distinguished by parties with movie stars and rock idols, run-ins with the press and the police, and a subsequent stint in rehab. When Chloe shoots to instant fame as a spokesmodel for a national ad campaign, her long-lost birth father appears out of nowhere. Her best friend betrays her, and she has to struggle to keep it all together, her sobriety, her friendships, and her integrity, despite the betrayals of those around her. Ultimately, though, Chloe comes spectacularly into her own, achieving stardom in her own right and finding true love.
Ah, I wonder where the inspo came from. Although no shade, because as we've touched upon in previous episodes, like the Dolly Alderton one, many, many very well-respected writers of this current era are constantly essentially writing autofiction.
What's quite funny in the book is how the very best friend of Chloe is presented. So she's a fake blonde friend called Simone Westlake. She talks about how everything about her is fake. Her eyes are fake. And I think that's quite interesting because you know that Paris Hilton actually wore blue contacts constantly for like 15 years throughout the noughties. Her eyes are in fact not blue.
So what are they?
Like some muddy brown colour, I think. The New York Post, of course, covered the book at the time. All of the tabloids were desperate to read it because they wanted to see exactly how this, I guess, Simone, aka Paris Hilton figure, was being portrayed.
Yes.
And also the way that she is paired up with Simone, the character in the book, is because they are put together to a series of commercials that depict real life scenes. So it's this huge nod to reality TV. Like, they're not even trying to hide it. So essentially, Simone, who everyone thinks is a thinly veiled portrayal of Paris, is a massive bitch who's completely fake, who uses everyone around her, is like just the epitome of awfulness. I think that really speaks as well to what Nicole said about their feud in interviews, which is essentially that she just didn't like Paris and didn't want to be around her and just didn't really have anything in common with her as a person.
I think this whole thing is really relevant to what Paris Hilton said about why he started his really vitriolic blog. He said, I saw what I was doing like an online soap opera. You have your heroes and you have your villains. And I think with the start of reality TV in the late 90s and 2000s, that is essentially what the public were doing with these real people. They were seeing them as caricatures, as characters, as heroes and villains that you could, and they didn't see them as real people. And that's why we found it so easy, I think, to consume and like leer over this content.
We just hadn't thought about the long-term impact as well, as you say. We hadn't really thought about celebrities as real people and what hounding people in such a way would actually do. I think Princess Diana's death actually was the first time that people talked about the massively detrimental impact being hounded could have on a person.
Definitely. I mean, reading some of the headlines in these tabloids about Lindsay, it just blew my mind that people were seeing these on the covers and then buying them. Just a few of them. Lindsay Lohan piles on the pounds in rehab. Bear in mind, we know that she has bulimia and was incredibly skinny before that in a really unhealthy way.
And also she's been in rehab.
Yeah.
Like, obviously things are going to change in your body when you're literally coming off dependency to drugs, for God's sake.
Exactly.
That was actually part of the whole thing with Nicole as well. And it's why Nicole's weight had been fluctuating and why she was perhaps, again, air quotes, bigger
yeah.
when she first became famous than later was because she was fresh out of rehab. She just got sober. And particularly when you're coming off alcohol, alcohol has so much sugar in it that you really crave sugar when you're withdrawing right. from alcohol dependency.
Yeah, that makes so much sense.
You can tend to pick out a lot on sweets and chocolates and things like that.
But then our attitude to weight was still so toxic that when Lindsay Lohan became, again, air quotes, a healthy weight, whatever that is, she's quoted on the cover of a female magazine saying, "I've now realized that skinny is unattractive." Again, you're just shaming another completely different and very healthy body type for many people.
I mean, it was all so toxic. Nicole Richie did the same after all of this conversation about her weight. There was one incident where a Memorial Day invite of hers was leaked, and there was what she claims was a joke, but still deeply problematic, a caveat on this invite that said, "Women, there will be scales at the door, and if you weigh over 100 pounds, you're not coming in."
Fucking hell.
And it's like, you've been subject to so much like abuse and discussion about your weight. The fact that you would then continue to perpetuate those kinds of ideas is wild.
Well, it's the classic abuser trope, isn't it? You
yeah,
do
true,
what,
you've, true.
What people have done to you, to other people. So then a few of other of these headlines. Lindsay Lohan, from tween dream to train wreck. How Lindsay Lohan partied her way to the poorhouse. Low life,
oh,
with a quote from her mum. "Lindsay saw my ex abusing me. Shame of the city." The National Enquirer had a cover line, "Who will die first?" featuring pictures of Lisa Marie Presley and Lindsay Lohan.
Oh my God.
It was, they said that either Lisa Marie Presley would eat herself to death or Lindsay Lohan might die by suicide in jail. There was another one, "Destroying her little sister. She's ruined her own life and now she's endangering her baby sister, Ali." Then there was her mugshot on the cover of the New York Post with the cover line, "It suits. Lindsay looks lovely in gel orange."
Wow.
It's just...
It was just so inappropriate the way that women's bodies were constantly up for scrutiny. The piece I just touched on, the Vanity Fair 2006 piece, to have Nicole's doctors commenting on her weight and potential eating disorder in a Vanity Fair article,
that is
utter madness.
It's so weird because, as I mentioned earlier, there was this whole kind of girl power, third wave feminism, then like Ledette culture. There was this also rise in kind of soft porn as well. So Girls Gone Wild was a big thing. Videos of topless drunk women performing sexual acts on each other. And there was also MTV Spring Break,
yes.
live streaming. It was this constant, what an editor called, raunch core.
It really was. And I remember that being part of why my mom hated that as like this tiny child, I wanted to read Paris Hilton's yeah. memoir. But I don't think that that's a reflection of like my base interests at that age. I think that's a reflection of the culture. And genuinely, the women that were being held up as role models for young girls were highly sexualized all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I have to say that Lindsay Lohan actually does kind of rebuke the narrative that she was sexualized against her will. So in 2008, she did a naked shoot for New York Mag, and she also posed naked for Playboy. And in both instances, she says how liberating and empowering it's been for her. She talks about how Marilyn Monroe was a huge influence for both shoots. And in fact, the New York one actually restages the infamous 1962 Burt Stern shoot of Marilyn Monroe naked sipping champagne. And Lindsay says about Marilyn, "Here is a woman who is giving herself to the public. She's saying, 'Look, you've taken a lot from me, so why don't I give it to you myself?' She's taking control back." So I think in Lindsay's eyes, that was her way of taking back control.
I mean, I do totally get that. I think if as a woman, you want to do a naked shoot, like good for you. If you find that empowering, then great. But isn't it interesting that she felt that she even had to reclaim her image in the first place?
Yes.
Els, I must know, how the hell is your Christmas shopping going, my love?
Well, I usually leave it to the last minute and then have a complete meltdown. But this year has been made much easier by our friends at Yonder, the UK's highest rated rewards credit card that lets you earn points as you spend and then redeem those points on amazing experiences and gifts across the UK. So I am much happier.
So guys, as you well know, we've already used our Yonder points at some of London's best restaurants and bars, as well as luxury gyms like Cobox and BXR. My next date is going to Solis, the hottest new restaurant opening in London at Battersea
Fancy.
Power Station. And for Christmas, get this, Yonder have added online shopping partners as well. So Elle, can you please fill me in on all the options? Because I'm very excited.
Yes, babe. So our fave, Freddy's Flowers, is on there. Perfect for a wintry bunch to brighten up the Christmas table. Plus vegan sustainable wine from New Theory, canned cocktails from Mixtons, and British honey from The Honey Project. All great for Secret Santa gifts. And then for a special someone, tailor-made suits from Batch.
Stunning. That is a very special gift. I'm going to dive in immediately. To clarify, we can use our Yonder points, yes?
Yes. So, for instance, my dad loves honey and I can use around 2,000 of my points to get him a pot of ginger honey completely free.
That is so cute. Let's just hope your dad doesn't listen and spoil the surprise yes. too early. Thank you so much to our friends at Yonder. Give it a go today and get your first month free and 10,000 points when you join, then £15 a month thereafter. Yonder's working hard to help people build good credit habits, so please do make sure you borrow responsibly. T's and C's apply. Rep 66.7% APR variable. So to go back to what I was saying in terms of Paris perhaps being a slight mean girl, however, while I have incredible empathy for her and everything that she's been through, she has got quite a problematic reputation. So I don't know if you know this, but in 2007, there was this incident whereby she failed to pay like a $200 bill on a storage unit that she had. And so the owners of the storage unit put the storage unit up for auction. Some people bought it, this couple, they tried to sell it back to Paris for like $2 million. She just ignored them or didn't get the message or whatever. And then they sold it for like 10 million to someone else, who then proceeded to set up this website, Paris Exposed, where every week they would sell extremely private, either contents or information of Paris from said storage unit. So among the personal items that they shared were medical bills that received that revealed sensitive information, phone numbers of celebrity friends, a private journal, prescriptions, bank statements, and lots of home videos. One of these videos that was leaked shows Paris and younger sister Nikki dancing together at a house party to Notorious B.I.G.'s Hypnotize. In the video, they're using extremely offensive racial slurs. And actually, once this went public, people were quick to note that it wasn't the first time that Paris was being accused of racism, of anti-Semitism, and of just like really disgusting behavior. So I think while Paris has had this incredible like image revamp, particularly since 2020, which is when she went public with what happened to her as a teenager at Provo in Utah, the treatment center for troubled teens. So in 2020, Paris released a documentary called This Is Paris, which vowed to reveal the real person behind the celebrity persona. As I said, I have real empathy for her. She went into detail in that documentary about the serious trauma and abuse that she had experienced as a teenager. This, of course, all framed her in a far more positive light. But it's very important not to forget incidents like the video that I've just spoken about. It's not the only time that she was caught making racist or anti-gay or anti-Semitic comments. She was even a vocal supporter of Trump during his presidency. So I think now, whilst Paris does like to position herself...
Sorry, she was a vocal supporter of Trump during his presidency, even though she knew that he and Melania watched her sex tape.
I know, how bloody weird.
Gosh, maybe she doesn't know that.
And obviously Ivanka Trump's in their circles, like Kim K's like really besties with Ivanka still. New York society, I think, stepped away from them a bit at the time, but I think they've all gone back to like being friends again. I do think that Paris has very carefully curated this image now of sort of acceptance. She's very, very big as a DJ. So for those that don't know, she in fact was the highest paid female DJ in the world in 2014. She knows her stuff. So I've been watching her reality TV show recently, Paris in Love. And she does say she learned from the very best. When she just liked DJing, she decided to hire the business's finest, learn everything there was to know about DJing and producing. And now she genuinely has been playing these huge sets where she commands like $1 million a set, huge festivals all over the world, massive residencies in Vegas. And that's become a core part of her business model. Lots of it is in gay clubs. And so she's kind of positioned herself as this huge ally to the LGBTQ plus community. But is she actually? Or is she just doing it to make money? I mean, I don't know.
Very good question. I mean, I would think that it's to make money.
I would also think the same. I think she's obsessed with making money, being quoted saying, you know, my mother told me it was rude to talk about money, but I'm so proud of what I've made. Like, she's kind of money obsessed, and you definitely see that in the Paris in Love series. Like, she'll take these big gigs. She talks about how she'll play weddings and bar mitzvahs and stuff if the price is right.
Really?
And this is a woman with a net worth of 320 million. And former friend Brandon Davies, he not only told the National Enquirer that she would constantly use the N-word. He also said that she puts down Jews and other minorities too. And I'm Jewish. I found it depressing. I finally had enough of her attitude 6 months ago and I finished with her. I don't want anything to do with her. I don't need anything from her. She is no longer my friend. She's just not a nice person.
I mean, that is the impression I'm getting.
It seems to be the refrain of this investigation.
Whereas I would say that Lindsay is, I think, a nice person. I watch clips from her show. Oprah, I think, tried to give her a lifeline at one point and set up a reality show for her where they would like film a day in the life of Lindsay Lohan, basically. And there's a clip I watched of her telling her assistant why his work isn't good enough. Oh, and it went viral because a lot of people were like, oh my God, look, this is like classic, like chaotic addict, like getting angry and getting all stressed or out of to the people around her. Whereas others have been like, no, she communicated really politely and clearly the reason why his work was not good enough. And having watched the clip, I also think she comes across really respectful and professional.
Oh, interesting. I thought you were going to say she comes across awfully as like an entitled celebrity brat.
No, it sounds like he hasn't done what he was meant to do.
Interesting.
And she is fed up of having to constantly ask him to do the same thing many times.
Right.
And he's essentially just failed at his job and she's trying to reprimand him as like politely as she can. But she's also clearly quite irritated. She's irritated, but professional.
Okay.
She comes across really well, I think.
So having watched footage of Paris Hilton in a similar kind of situation in Paris in Love, this current series that she has at the moment, which I've been watching on Hey You, it basically follows she and her now husband Carter Room's relationship. So the first season focuses on them like planning their wedding. The second season shows them welcoming their first child, Phoenix, by surrogate. And the way that the two of them interact is really odd. So Carter Room, who is actually a venture capitalist, so he's a very wealthy man in his own right, and they've known each other for 15 years. They got together 2 years ago. He's weird, I will say. They do have an odd relationship. The dynamic between them is bizarre. He's really pushing the wedding planning in the first season, like to the point that he constantly embarrasses Paris in front of family members, being
no.
like, list what you've done. List what you've done in the wedding planning. But Paris then does say in her talking head, oh, well, I have been engaged 3 times and both other times I called it off before the wedding. So I think he's just getting nervous.
Okay, fair.
But there is this moment where she plays a set at his cousin's wedding. And oh my God, she has the biggest brat attack that I've ever seen because the sound system isn't ready on time for when she's going up to her set. Like, this is a cousin's wedding in like rural America somewhere. It's not bloody Tomorrowland. It's not that deep. And she switches about it not being set up and how she's going to look like an idiot and how everyone's going to think that, you know, the music and the levels aren't right. And this has happened before with this really incredibly complicated piece of kit. And like, she's literally like shouting at Carter about how inexcusable this setup is. And it's like, you do realize you're here to do a favor of playing a gig at his cousin's wedding. Like, you've got to stop.
Do you know what? So my initial reaction was like, okay, this clearly shows that like line, or you know, famous people are trapped at the mental age of when
yes,
they became
exactly.
famous.
That's like, why I was surprised with what you said about Lindsay, because I thought she's awful.
No, so that sounds so childish of Paris. But then on the other hand, considering she's a woman that's been so denigrated for being a dumb blonde, for being a bimbo.
No wonder she's like
hypervigilant. Exactly. Yes. And people have tried to rinse her for not being a proper DJ. So I can see why she might be really sensitive to that.
I mean, I do as well, to be fair.
Playing devil's advocate, even though she still does seem like a proper mean girl.
I mean, lover or hater, she is definitely not the dumb blonde that she wanted people to think she was originally. She's a very smart entrepreneur who has made a fortune, has had over like 27 different lines under her brand. One thing I found interesting about the Paris in Love show is that she talks not only about all these various deals that she has, but the fact that she has a media brand. Did you know this?
I did not.
So I'm going to have to read you through the website because I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw it. So it's called 1111 Media. So 1111 Media is a global media content company and platform elevating creators, brands and IP through the power of storytelling. Inspirational, impactful and thought-provoking premium entertainment, content, experiences and products. Founded by Paris Hilton and Bruce Gersh, with divisions across television, audio, digital, impact and licensing, 1111 Media has an authentic and in-depth understanding of creator-led brands with scale, authenticity and purpose. So there's 1111 Media Management Team. They have a wide variety of experience across the world's most iconic companies, including Disney, Time Inc., NBCU and more. Then there's Slivington Manor Entertainment, which comes under the same bracket. So you know how it's like Sliving, it's like that wasn't awareness. She's got a dog, Slivington. Slivington Manor Entertainment is a leading content powerhouse focused on creating thought-provoking, entertaining and impactful storytelling. Again, recent productions include Cooking with Paris for Netflix and Paris in Love for Peacock, with multiple projects in development. So that actually tells me that in fact, all of this renaissance or resurgence that has been going on recently with Paris, all of the content is in fact created by her in-house.
So is it because she was frustrated with how few opportunities she was getting offered, so she had to create her own?
I reckon, but I think it also goes back to what we discussed in our Beckham episode, where we said that David Beckham's production company is the company behind their documentary. These days, celebrity content, like, they have to control it. And these films are always done in-house, whether it's Beyonce's film, whether it's Taylor Swift's film. Everyone wants a hagiography, I think. So they want to be in control of their own narrative, perhaps because they've all been so burnt by what went down in the noughties that now they have to control the production companies themselves. It's quite interesting.
I think, yeah.
There's also 1111 Digital, which oversees Paris Hilton's digital media presence on social web and across the metaverse. So you know Paris Hilton's quite big in the metaverse. Yeah. She really pushed NFTs at one point, although again, that was quite problematic.
Didn't Kim K do that as well?
They've both since been in serious trouble for it because they didn't disclose that they were paid serious sums of money to promote NFTs, which now essentially, you know, worthless.
Yeah, exactly.
She's also got London Audio, her podcast network. I mean, did you even know that Paris Hilton had a podcast? Because I didn't. She has a flagship weekly podcast, This Is Paris. There's also the Trapped in Treatment podcast with several more in development. Then there is 1111 Licensing.
Gosh.
She has literally got an empire.
She's a media mogul.
She is. And she's controlling every single aspect of her narrative and of how she's represented now.
That is wild. So safe to say that the Naughty Zit Girl has done good.
She absolutely has. And she's the one that really kickstarted celebrity fragrance. The final thing I'll say on Paris's massive wad, her 300 million. Apparently, she has generated over the years over 2.6 billion in gross revenue for her many fragrances. So she was the person that really kickstarted the celebrity perfume boom. When she first partnered with a beauty brand to launch a perfume, she instantly boosted that company's revenue by 47%.
Ho-ho.
And as I say, I think she's had about 20 fragrances. She had one out last year that was like a scent of love around the wedding.
I would love to know who buys those kind of fragrances.
It must be children.
Do you think?
Well, I do remember having J.Lo's Glow, which I loved when I was a kid, obviously.
I don't think I bought any celebrity fragrances. I mean, they always just smell like crap.
I remember quite a few people having the Britney ones. But I mean, we were literally pre-teens.
Yes, I guess so. It's like that super like sweet, sugary smell that like teens liked. So in terms of what happened with Lindsay, as I say, her career really dried up after a series of firings and bad reviews. And I'm sorry to say, in terms of Hollywood respect, she has never really got that back. When she went back onto SNL in 2010, I watched a few of the skits that she did with Kirsten Wiig, and I was really shocked at how like extinguished she seemed in comparison to Kirsten Wiig, who's amazing and sparkling and just like such a great actress. Lindsay just seems third rate. Like, she is really, really shit on SNL in 2010. And I think she's never really managed to get that spark back. I know that sounds so mean, but I just mean in terms of critically looking at her work. Right.
Like, sadly, her struggles have kind of overshadowed her actual acting work. And I think perhaps she didn't have the opportunities to really hone her craft.
Yes.
Think about the Christmas film from last year, which we did talk about on air.
Yes.
We'll name drop the episode in the show notes if you want to go back and listen. I'm sure lots of you watched it. It was the favourite Christmas film of last year, but it was extraordinarily crap.
Falling for Christmas.
That was it.
And her sister also has a little cameo. She plays a stylist, I think. So, I mean, and she's got an upcoming film coming called Irish Wish.
She has a partnership with Netflix, doesn't she? Like a deal, like she's doing a 3-film deal or something.
I think they might all be Christmas films. So no one, she might have another one.
God, she's relegated to Christmas films for the rest of time.
Oh God, I know. She'll be doing like Christmas print stuff. However, despite her acting work having kind of dried up, she seems happier than ever. So she actually moved to Dubai, partly, I think, to escape the paparazzi, because in Dubai, you can't take photographs of people in public. So I think she moved to Dubai to get privacy. It was also at this point that she was rumored to be dating the Crown Prince Mohammed bin
Salman.
Is this when she was photographed wearing a hijab and people thought perhaps that she'd converted to Islam?
Yes. In 2018, she also signed on to star in an MTV reality series, Lindsay Lohan's Beach Club, which focused on the Mykonos beach house that she was
oh my God, creating. I remember about this. Okay, please tell me everything. That is literally so funny that A, she was creating a beach house in Mykonos, but B, that that was the subject of a reality TV show, and why have I not seen it?
Yes, so the series premiered on January the 8th, 2019, but was cancelled after one season.
Right.
And her beach club was reviewed on TripAdvisor as just a pile of rocks.
Right.
And I think it also closed. But in June 2019, she sold the property and the beach club in Mykonos was closed.
Gosh. So now she's living it up in Dubai.
Well, she's now very happy. She's married to a finance guy called Bader Shammas. I hope I've said that right. In March, she was expecting her first child, which of course Dina did about 100 interviews about.
Of course.
Yeah. And she's given birth.
Sweet.
And she looks, if you go on her Instagram, she looks really joyous and well. She also had her own podcast for a while, but that also ended after one season.
Right.
There is a theme here.
Yes.
But however, you know, who cares? Because she's clearly really happy and found the love of her life and is a mother now. And maybe that will be the creative stimulus for her.
Nicole Richie's story wraps up in a very similar way. So she, in 2006, met the musician Joel Madden from Good Charlotte.
Yeah,
they've since gone on to have two children together. I think they're very happy. She very much did retreat from the spotlight. While she has had quite a few different acting jobs, she definitely didn't court the press in the way that she did in the noughties. She was successful with her fashion brand House of Harlow. And actually, now it's funny because I would say Sophia Richie is the far more famous daughter, Richie daughter, than Nicole. Nicole's the kind of chic older sis that was pictured at Cap d'Eden Rock just on the side at the wedding. And since, I am heartened to report, Nicole and Paris have definitely made up, because there was quite a sweet little clip that Paris posted, again though probably tactical on Paris's behalf, of the two of them together at Paris's wedding doing a little like salsa, salsa. And Paris being like, oh, one of my oldest friends. So I do think that Paris always resolves her feuds eventually.
To end, I would like to close with a petty little bit of trivia.
Love
that
it.
I think pays homage to all the pettiness that we have covered in this two-parter.
Give it to me.
So Joel Madden.
Yes.
Also went out with Hilary Duff.
Fun fact. Oh my God, Hilary Duff, and we haven't even got into her.
Oh my God.
We'll be back with some Hilary Duff coverage at some point.
And Hilary Duff was actually Lindsay Lohan's first feud, because they both shared an ex, Aaron Carter. Very sad, RIP.
Yes.
But Lindsay's brother, Cody, came up to Joel Madden at a party and asked for an autograph. And Joel Madden, when he found out that he was Lindsay's brother, said, I need to speak to your mother first. Made Cody march him over to Lindsay's mother and said, if you want Cody to have his autograph, your daughter needs to apologize to Hillary.
Wow. Well,
And that's it.
What a brilliantly, perfectly petty note to end
on. Exactly.
Guys, if you've enjoyed this episode that's a little bit different, do let us know. We have lots more investigative topics in the pipeline that we want to dig right into.
Don't worry, Huns. We're brewing the news of the world, the celebrity PR relationships. It's coming.
Yeah, we are working on all the stories that we have promised. And we will, of course, be back with some up-to-date pop culture recos very soon.
Yes.
I cannot wait to dig into all the things we've been watching and reading.
We still haven't discussed Tomorrow, which we must do.
We must do that.
At another point.
Go away and read it if you haven't yet. The best-selling book of last year, I think it was.
Novel. By Gabrielle Zevin.
Stunning stuff. Enjoy, guys, and please do, as ever, rate, review, and subscribe. Let us know what you'd like to hear about next time, and have a fabulous rest of your day or evening, whatever you're doing. We love you so much. Thanks for listening.
Bye.